and welcome to Stories of Scotland, a podcast all about Scottish history, nature and folklore. And in this episode, Jenny is taking us on a journey into the glens and exploring all three of these things, our very favourite things, because we are visiting the brand new Dundragon Rewilding Centre.
Yes, this is the world's first ever rewilding centre. And it sits in Glenmoriston, in the middle of the country, on the road from Inverness to Skye, and is about an hour's drive from both of these places, and an hour's drive from Fort William.
Glenmoriston is a river glen, so it's connected by the meandering and cascading rapids of the River Moriston. The river had extensive work on it as part of a hydroelectric scheme, and it was dammed in 1957, to form the Dundragon Reservoir. To the north, there's the spectacular Glen Affric Mountains, and to the west lies the Five Sisters of Kintale. And to the east, you'll find Loch Ness, where Nessie herself lives. If you find yourself exploring the area, then please do get a map and look for adorable bridges, because this land is rich in lovely stone structures.
I recently journeyed along the shores of Loch Ness and into Glenmoriston and visited the Dundragon Rewilding Centre. It's just off the main road and really easy to find. It opened in 2023 and it's lovely and bright and light and fresh feeling inside. The first thing you see when you enter is this huge tree structure made of polished scrap metal with shining branches reaching up to the high ceiling and all sorts of critters perched upon them, from squirrels to wildcats to little metal bees. The signboard there tells me that the tree represents the tree of life, Ambila, which connects the heavens and the earths. The snake coiled around the roots represents the underworld, while the bird sitting on the highest branch helps guide spirits onto the next world.
I read a little about sacred trees, and they are sometimes considered boundary markers in ancient times for the territories of different tribes. Now, we've explored these trees before, having protective qualities against various forms of ill-meaning magic, so it does make sense that sacred trees can also be expected to be defending your lands. And then the little birds that you talk about carrying spirits that live in these trees, I think a very popular piece of folklore as well is that the birds that are living in the sacred trees can bring messages between the fairy folk and the human people.
Give us some more milk.
The fairies just sending a shopping list for the various types of cheeses that they want you to leave at their shrines. The precise amount of butter that they want you to bury in their bog. There's also a lot of trees in folklore that have healing powers. So they're acting as a conduit for the curing that people can achieve from a relationship with the environment.
Just like I'm a sucker for a good tree, Annie, I am a sucker for a good map. And there is a great one in the centre that shows all these Gaelic place names around the area and their English translations. And it paints such a vivid picture of the landscape and the life upon it. So a few examples of these are
Alt Fionn,
Alder Burn,
Loch Nanian,
Loch of the Birds,
Alt Nangor,
Burn of the Goats,
Alt Sai,
She-Wolf Burn,
Sroan Namuik,
Point of the Pig,
Meowl Nadore,
Hill of the Cops,
Drochage Luvich,
Adorable Bridge.
I think we snuck that one in there maybe, Jenny.
The centre is run by Trees for Life, an award-winning conservation charity that was started in the late 80s. And not only is it packed with information on rewilding, but loads more. There's a lovely little cafe, lots of wonderful walks in the surrounding woods and on the estate, heaps of fascinating folklore, and they also do events.
These range from guided mythology walks to whole residential weekends that allow you to fully immerse yourself in the rewilding of the Scottish landscape. It's very exciting.
After I arrived and read every single signboard in there, I had a herbal tea in the cafe before sitting down with a few of the folk who worked at the centre to explore the world of rewilding, the fascinating connection between land and lore, and how we humans have as much to do with rewilding as trees. First, I chatted with Kate Gillespie, and she told me all about how Trees for Life first started.
Our founder, Alan Watson Featherston, was spending time in Glenafric, and he had something of an epiphany, I would say, in the late 80s. He was out spending time in the Caledonian Forest. So Glenafric is one of the best places in Scotland. You can see the Caledonian Forest, and he sort of saw it through new eyes and realised that there was not this new generation of forest coming through. So all these beautiful old granny pines were sort of the end of the line, as it were, and he made a sort of personal mission to do something about that. And the way he did that was to bring in people. So he started to work with volunteers. So sort of beginning in the 90s, you had groups of volunteers going up to Glenafric, spending a week at a time at Athnamulloch, nice bothy up there, taking volunteers out and supporting the regeneration of the old Caledonian Forest. And we're still doing that core work of bringing people out to Glenafric.
So for 30 years, Trees for Life has been slowly but surely rewilding Glenafric. Groups of volunteers go for a week and they plant trees, they build and maintain fences, and they help the ecosystem get back onto its feet. My little cousin actually did this, and now she's working in forestry. So a lot of the volunteers, I think, take more from it than just the joy of rewilding. It helps their careers as well.
And the results of this work are truly wonderful. I spent a lot of time in Glenafric, hiking and camping and exploring. It's this picturesque glen, surrounded by towering mountains on either side and way off in the far distance. But below the snow-clad mountain peaks, there is a vast patchwork of peat bogs, rivers, heathers, and that's right, thriving native forests. This mosaic landscape is evidence that Trees for Life's work is successfully rejuvenating the Caledonian Forest.
Wait, Jenny, hold your horses there. Just quickly, remind me again, what is the Caledonian Forest, and why is it even important that we save it?
The Caledonian Forest is the name given to the native and natural pine woods of Scotland. This name was actually coined by Ptolemy in the 2nd century Common Era. And although when he was writing, he meant the entire Great Forest that covered basically all of Scotland at the time, including lots of types of forest that weren't dominated by pine, we now consider it just the small remnants of ancient pinewood forests that are scattered throughout the Highlands. And it's imperatively important that we save this forest because it is an integral part of the Scottish landscape and ecosystem. It provides habitats for countless species and supports an entire intricate ecosystem that is vital for our biodiversity. This is especially important as we face the climate crisis and large-scale biodiversity collapse. And that's why it's so great to see the success of the consistent work in Glenafric. And this success allowed Trees for Life to buy the neighbouring estate of Dundregan in 2008.
Dundregan is in Glenmoriston, which is, I suppose, is the glen to the south of Glenafric, so we're not too far from Loch Ness. Dundregan is another fantastic place where you can see remnants of the Caledonian Forest. It's a 10,000 acre estate with a mix of different habitats, and we've got some really good remaining old pine woods on the slopes here, and then as you kind of get higher up the hill, it goes into more traditional sort of scrubland, montane habitats. We've been rewilding Dundregan for 15 years, and that really went to a new level in 2023, last year, when we opened the Rewilding Centre.
So what exactly is rewilding? Well, to understand rewilding, we have to go back to when the land was originally wild. About 12,000 years ago, the Ice Age ended, and the great ice sheets and glaciers that covered Scotland receded. This left a barren landscape just waiting to be colonised, and colonised it was. First, lichens came, then mosses, then plants, and eventually trees. And by about 7,000 years ago, most of the country was blanketed in a dense, diverse, and thriving forest. The northern area of this was the Caledonian Forest, and it consisted mainly of Scots pine, birch, oak, rowan, and juniper trees. But it was far more than just trees, for the forest floor was thick with mosses, heathers, and ferns, and alive with activity. Birds sang in the branches, beavers dammed rivers, herds of wild cattle were hunted by lynx. Brown bears ate their fill of juicy berries and the occasional salmon, and packs of grey wolves stalked through the undergrowth. Nomadic Neolithic humans protected their families and livestock from these predators as they transitioned from hunting and gathering to a settled agricultural-based lifestyle. They began clearing the dense forest for fields, building materials, and expanding settlements. And once started, this trend has never been reversed. As the millennia passed, the climate changed and became cooler and wetter, restricting the forest's growth. And we humans continue to alter the landscape and fell the forests. And this carried on until the thriving ecosystem that once was all but gone. Wolves, bears, and lynx had all been hunted to extinction, and the land was now used for farming, grazing animals, or hunting estates. To add to this, with no natural predators left, deer numbers exploded. And as deer love to eat young trees, any area where seeds were still sprouting in the soil soon became stripped of any chance of revival. By the 1950s, only tiny pockets of what was once an expansive wild woodland remained, leaving the Scottish landscape an ecological shadow of its former self. But here we are, on the brink of ecological collapse, and at the forefront of our efforts to prevent this is Trees for Life and the quickly growing rewilding movement. The goal of rewilding is to help the land to recover from centuries of damage and re-establish a resilient and diverse ecosystem. Humans are an integral part of this landscape, and we are an integral part of its recovery. Nature is inherently resilient, and by helping it through enacting appropriate deer and land management strategies, it's amazing how quickly it starts to recover. Trees for Life encourage natural regeneration whilst also growing and planting native species, as well as aiding the introduction of wildlife back to the forests, so that the whole ecosystem can start to weave its web once more. So let's hear Kate tell us all about Dundregan's role in rewilding and what it means for the Highlands.
Rewilding is very much about people. People are part of the ecosystem. We have lived with nature for millennia, and I think in recent centuries we've grown distant from that people-nature connection. So Dundregan Rewilding Centre is really about re-fostering that connection and making rewilding a lot more accessible, and we want it to be a place where people who know nothing about rewilding can come, to people that know lots about rewilding can come, and we sort of cater to those different audiences. We need nature. I think the more that we can understand it and be engaged in it, the more we can preserve it and make it better. Rewilding is also about the future as well. Where we are in the Highlands, we have a history of depopulation. And I think one of the most hopeful things about rewilding, the most exciting things about rewilding, is what it could do to the future of this area in a really positive way. So whether that's creating new jobs, new industries, teasing people back who've maybe left to go to bigger cities, and also kind of like firing up our imagination. You know, nature has been very much woven into culture, into folklore, into history, and that's a very ripe ground for new industry. We see Dundregan as our rewilding demonstrator, where we're trialing new approaches and new techniques and new ideas. There's a real sort of hive of activity at Dundregan, and the centre is part of that. So When we bought Dundragon in 2008, it was a traditional shooting estate, and there was one employee who was a stalker. And today we have around 30 people working here. So across the rewilding centre, and we've got our tree nursery here as well, where we grow 100,000 trees every year, and where we work with volunteers to do that as well. So there's lots of different people coming and going here, doing different jobs, having different experiences. We kind of have demonstrated that rewilding is for people, it's for jobs, it's for economic opportunity, and we're enacting that here at Dundragon. It's a hub of activity that we would hope would be replicated by other estates in the future. It's sort of trying to show that you can do things differently in a way that works for local people and local communities and nature. Trees for Life started as a tree planting charity, and that's what we did for quite a long time, and that's brilliant, and that's something that we still continue to do. But I suppose in recent years, we have come to be aware that we are in a climate emergency, we are in a biodiversity emergency, and in response to that, we need to really act on a bigger scale. And that's why we've really embraced the term rewilding, because rewilding is large-scale restoration of nature. It's enabling nature to get to a point where it can take care of itself. And it's a very collaborative act if you consider the scale of the landscapes that we're looking at in the Highlands. There's a lot of different people in those landscapes, a lot of different people with different interests. And our long-term vision for Trees for Life is to bring all these different people to the table and have a shared agenda that benefits everyone.
It's absolutely intriguing. I think it's very easy to imagine rewilding as a purely nature thing with as little human intervention as possible. However, absolutely all land in Scotland is managed by people in some way or another. All of the land has been reshaped continually by human interventions, often being harvested for profit and resources. So rewilding is about understanding the healing that communities can do with the land, for both themselves and for nature, and finding a balance between the needs of both humans and nature. And what we're learning here, I feel, is that increased biodiversity improves how we can relate to the environment. It's better for the people and it's better for the land. So it's all around the best. And I think this offers a really stark contrast to the romanticisation that the Highlands constantly faces, which was a fire that was fanned by the Victorians who wanted to hunt stags, but that still blazes today. It portrays the Highlands as a bleakly wild place with very stark mountains that are remote and devoid of human life.
Yeah, and this is only compounded by the Scotland we see today through our screens. Scotfluencers love to favour hidden and secret spots where the highly degraded landscape as we know it today is celebrated as being this ideal image of nature. But we live in the Highlands, and we see firsthand how important and entwined humans are with the natural environment around us. And it makes sense that rewilding is about finding a balance between us that benefits both nature and society. And it's so lovely to see this balance being worked out at Dundragon. So just what does this look like in action?
We have this really exciting initiative called Afric Highlands, which is a collaboration between Trees for Life and Rewilding Europe. Rewilding Europe have about 9 different rewilding landscapes across the continent. Afric Highlands is the British one, the Scottish one. Afric Highlands is an idea to create this big corridor of restoration starting at Loch Ness on the east coast and going right through to the west coast. So you've got Glen Afric sat right in the middle there. And it's about bringing together landowners and communities to collaborate in new ways to restore nature on a bigger scale. So over the coming years, we're really going to be prioritising natural regeneration. Also in the mix, we have species reintroduction. We're missing some really key wildlife from our forests that used to be here. So for the last sort of 7-8 years, we've been creating new red squirrel populations in the Northwest Highlands, and they're doing really well. I mean, that's such a rewilding success story for us. red squirrels are native animal to the UK. They used to be across the whole of the UK. And sadly, they are missing from huge chunks of the country today, but the Highlands remain something of a stronghold for them. But that's certain parts of the Highlands. So we've got really healthy red squirrel populations in like the Cairngorms, around Inverness, around the Murray coast. They're doing really well. Unfortunately, squirrels aren't so good at travelling themselves. So they kind of like, you know, it used to be said that when Scotland had much greater forest cover, a red squirrel could travel from one corner of the country to the other, from branch to branch. They used to have this big forest playground, which sadly today is a lot more fragmented. So we kind of had the idea of, well, can we give them a bit of a hand to spread out? So you have areas in the Northwest Highlands where there's good habitat for squirrels. Because of the kind of fragmented nature of the forest, they were unable to get to these habitats where they could potentially thrive. So starting about 8 years ago, we have been creating new populations. So we've got about 11 at the moment, and those stretch from Golspie in the far north, round into the Northwest Highlands, around Ullapool, going down into Plockton, Dorney area, then down towards Fort William and Arden American. And we're kind of looking for even more sites. So we capture the red squirrels from areas where they are really healthy numbers, so around Inverness and around Murray. And we only take a few, check them over, make sure they're healthy, and then we'll take them to a release site that we've chosen with a lot of care. They'll be quite happy there, and then release a good mix of males and females and hope that they breed. And they are. So in 2023, we carried out the first ever squirrel survey of the Highlands. So we were literally going plot to plot across the whole of the Highland region, seeing if there was squirrel activity there. And so we've been able to kind of plot out a map. So we've got quite a good idea of their distribution now. And they are doing so well. So from the areas where we've released them, they are really spreading out. And actually the different populations are starting to connect. We actually work really closely with communities, so they keep us up to date. So it is literally just, I saw a squirrel in this woodland. And then someone can go and report that. So there's a website called Saving Scotland's Red Squirrels. And then the other good way to know if a squirrel is in a certain area is to look for their feeding signs. It's a really nice example of you give nature a little bit of help, it just flourishes. We're also looking at beavers as well. And we're currently working with the local community and with Forestry and Land Scotland to see how we can do that in a way that works for everyone. And sort of longer term, we are also looking at the potential reintroduction of lynx. So we're part of a project called Lynx to Scotland. We kind of know ecologically that the Highlands could support population of lynx, actually up to 400, I believe. The challenge is not so much the habitat, it's the social perceptions. So that's a long-term project that we're working on. There's a really good project in the Cairngorms for wildcats. They've been breeding them in captivity, and just last autumn they released the first batch of wildcats, and they are being tracked. And the idea is if that reintroduction project in the Cairngorms goes well, we could potentially look at doing something similar in the Africa Highlands area. The knowledge of wildcat activity in this area is really limited. We really don't know how many there are. It could be like 100, but they're kind of clinging on. And just like the lynx, you would never see them.
Sometimes I curse the podcast medium because I wish you could all step through your headphones and breathe the fresh air, touch the happy saplings, and squint as the low golden sun streams through the canopy of Scots pine and illuminates a happy red squirrel as it leaps from branch to branch. If you are yearning to do just this, then you absolutely have to visit Dundregan and fully immerse yourself in the wonders of the Caledonian Forest. And not only because the forests and mountains and glens are truly stunning, but also because their land is rich in lore. And at Dundregan, they have really embraced this. Kiva is the folklore expert there, and she leads guided mythology walks around the estate. She knows a huge amount about the folklore of the local area and was kind enough to share some of it with me.
Hi there, my name's Kiva Kyohan. My role is working in the visitor experience team. engaging with anyone and everyone who wants to come here and learn about rewilding. And that rewilding, you know, includes the nature rewilding, the human rewilding aspect, and of course the mythology and folklore of this particular glen and this particular estate. I've worked in nature conservation for about 7 years, and I'm in the last few years starting to realise that actually the lore of the land is what really gives me that sense of dukkus, sense of connection to the land. And it's different for everyone, I think. But, you know, here at the Rewilding Centre, it's really exciting because we are working to rewild the land, but it also includes the inhabitants of that land, like all the species, including human beings. And I think the stories of the land, the wilder stories of the land, the stories of the personification of the land and the elements, which is encapsulated in a lot of aspects and stories such as the Kaliach, I think learning about those stories brings that magic back into the land, something that we've been missing a lot in our modern day. Working in nature conservation was very much focused on, I think, initially saving the planet, you know, really, really caring about the environment. But as time has gone on, I think it's become more apparent that we can't disconnect the human story from the nature story, because the reason we've got vast forests of oak woods that are still left are potentially because the Druids planted them as sacred groves thousands of years ago. You might have an old tree on top of a hill like we do here that's 500 years old. It's an oak tree, and potentially it's left there because of the stories. So the stories that people tell of the land currently and historically and mythologically shape our current ecological situation. So it's finding that connection between the two. And the more stories we tell of the land and the more magic we realise about the land, the more we're going to want to protect it. There's been a huge focus on the Gaelic with a lot of nature conservation organisations. And once you start to understand the Gaelic, you start to automatically research what the words mean, how they're pronounced, the etymology of the word. And those words unfolding start to unfold the stories of the land. With the Rewilding Centre here, a huge focus is on the stories, the place names. And as soon as you research them, you look into them. What does Cullen na Fianna mean? What does that mean? It's just across the road there. Oh, it means the wood of the Fianna. Who are the Fianna? Oh, the Fianna were the heroes of this glen, of the west coast of Scotland, of a lot of other places in Scotland and Ireland, you know, potentially in the Iron Age. And those stories have been told for thousands of years. And it starts to open up all of these secrets within the land, stories that people may have never heard of. When we first started, we did Gaelic training with Roddy McLean and Kate Langhorne and they give us some references here. So this book is fantastic. It's got a lot of stories of Glen Morriston and Dull Dragon, where apparently it means meadow of the dragon in Old Pictish. So Pictish, the word for meadow is dull, and then dragon. So this could mean meadow of the dragon, which is really cool. The stories have just been unfolding. The longer I'm here, the more I find, and it's been a really interesting journey. Dundragon is kind of on the border of where the kingdom of the Picts and the kingdom of the Gaels would have merged. That's why you have so many place names around here that are an amalgamation of Gaelic and Pictish. And you would have also had, interestingly, the geology here is fascinating because the Ice Age came down from the direction of the Isle of Skye. And it stopped here at Dundragon. And we have all these glacial deposits, like all these moraines, which ultimately formed the Fairy Hills later on. Fairy Hills, traditionally, as you know, are very rounded hills, very mystical in their features, usually have a meadow or a very lovely native oak wood on top of it, or some sort of tree that's associated with mythology or folklore. And the hill here, you know, it's predominantly oak. You know, if it was covered in Sitka spruce, it would probably lose its fairy powers, which unfortunately Tornishy, I think over in Glenurquhart, has been planted with Sitka spruce, which is quite sad. Apparently they decide, they're like, actually, you know what, it's not safe to be here anymore, and they leave. There's lots of stories of the big sheep coming in. And when the big sheep came to the Highlands, the fairies were like, ah, that's enough now, see you later. And apparently there was actually a battle between the sheep and the fairies at one point. There's a paragraph from, I can't remember what book it is, but it talks about Ireland, and a lot of the fairies have left Ireland because it's intensively farmed, so they had nowhere to go. The Dina Shí are traditionally meant to haunt or reside in the most remote, the most mystical, the wildest, the weirdest of places. The big sheep came, they depleted the biodiversity, and therefore the fairies, the magic, left the land. The geology is quite fascinating here. So the moraines and the fairy hills, and even Sheehan Buia, which we're looking at right now, the yellow fairy hill, that more than likely was a a moraine, a pile of glacial rock deposit, and then it was turned into a medieval motte. I think it was assessed by a team a few years ago, and it was thought to be from roughly the year 900. And then, you know, you go 700 years later and it's being recorded as Sheehan Buia. So the locals maybe didn't realise, because it was covered in grass and maybe a few trees, that it was actually a medieval motte. But because of the shape, it had to be a supernatural fairy domain. On the map here, we've got the two recorded fairy hills on the historical maps. Sheehan Buia, which is the yellow fairy hill, and Sheehan Mullach, which is the high fairy hill. And on top of Sheehan Mullach, we've got a big old oak tree. It's about 500 years old. And on the mythology walk, we visit this big, beautiful old fairy oak. And we've got three recorded fairy stories that are quite, I suppose, similar in terms of their content. They're about mischievous fairies of Dol Dragon. So there's a wonderful paragraph here from a book called Glenurquhar and Glenmorston in Olden Times, and it talks about Dundragon being one of the most famous places in the Highlands for its fairies. This book is from the late 1700s, and it says here, "And the favourite retreats of their Glenmorston brothers and sisters were the Sheehans of Dol Dragon. The fairies were very troublesome to the people of the parish in olden times." So it talks about how the people of this glen, and even over in Glenurquhar, were very aware of the fairies of Dundragon and how mischievous they were. And they were known to take away their children and turn them into changelings in the fairy otherworld. They were also known to sometimes shapeshift into beautiful human beings, known as in Gaelic, Lian and She. So that means a fairy lover. And they were also thought to kind of attack human beings with something called elf shot. And historically, if people found an arrowhead, like a Neolithic arrowhead, they thought it was a fairy arrow. And the word for a arrow, historically in Gaelic, is a Sayid Shi, which means a fairy arrow. People genuinely believed there was fairies shooting human beings through the ether out of mischievousness, and their cows as well. So the hills here, the three stories that we have are told on the walk, on this mythology walk, and they're all about mischievous fairies. I'll tell one of them, it's a little bit shorter. So we've got Sheehan Mullach, so the high fairy hill. And Sheehan Mullach has been on the maps for a very long amount of time, known as a fairy hill. It's got this beautiful 500-year-old oak tree right at the very top, and hopefully we'll get a chance to visit it. Along Sheehan Mullach, just coming past it, there's a stream called Cuchain na Skíne, which the English translation of the Gaelic, it means the streamlet of the knife. And, you know, when you start to look at a map, you would wonder, oh, why is that called the streamlet of the knife? And then if you find that old book from the 1700s, you'll read the story. And the story goes that there was a man called Ewan MacDonald, and he had just had his wife give birth to their firstborn child, a boy. He was delighted. He decided to go for a walk around the estate, around Dol Dragon, to celebrate. And as he's walking along, he decides to cross over the stream. And as he's crossing over the bridge, just near Sheehan Mullach, he hears a loud sighing above his head as he's in the middle of the bridge. And the sighing sounds exactly like the sighing of his wife who had just given birth to his child. His intuition tells him immediately that it's the Dina Shi, the fairy folk, or the Dina Ma, the good folk, the good people. And so what he does is he pulls his dirk out of his sock and he throws it up into the stream above his head in the name of the Trinity. And this dirk is made out of iron, and traditionally you would have used iron or had iron on you at all times to repel the magic of fairies or witches. And he threw it up into the air, it pierces the veil, and it pierces the power of the fairy host that was taking his wife and child away, and they fall down into his arms. And he manages to rescue his wife and his child from the fairies of Sheehan Mullach. And ever since that day, ever since that story, that stream on the map has been called Cuchain na Skíne. Every single point has a story, and one of the things I recommend is if anyone's at home and you happen to have an OS map and you're living in Scotland, is get that OS map out and just have a look on the map at how many different place names are actually in Gaelic. It's predominantly Gaelic. And as soon as you translate that, you'll realise there's a story associated with it. The stories of the land, the names of the places, they literally are the origin stories of our ancestors. When we do the mythology and folklore walks, it talks about the not only the folklore and mythology of the land, but also the kind of the understanding of the origins of all of these belief systems. And I think that's really important, because what Trees for Life is doing here is helping people connect to the environment, the natural world, and themselves through various different practices, such as going outdoors and spending quality time in nature. And I think the origin of most of these stories is animistic in its understanding of the world. So the belief system that everything has a soul. Even the word anima is a very old Proto-Indo-European word for soul. And that word anim is the Gaelic word for soul. So as we go on through time, that word could be 10,000 years old, and it's all to do with the soul, the belief system that everything has a form of consciousness. And, you know, the personification of all of the elements, I think, is something that's very much imbued within the Gaelic lore. It's a wonderful thing to start to learn the stories of the land and understand our own belief systems as we do it. And as we start to go forward, a lot of the time our awareness of Celtic mythology or Gaelic mythology becomes quite homogenized, but it's very localized, and people call the, you know, you've got the Cailleach, but there probably would have been thousands of different Cailleachs or Cailleachan, depending on where we're talking about. Even up the hill here, we've got Cailleach an Craic. She was known as one of the most malevolent Cailleachs in the area, and she had a particular disfavour for the Macmillans. She was said to stamp on their bonnets until a hole was formed. She would steal their bonnets while they were up there, Stravagan, and dance on their bonnets, form a hole. And if that hole was formed, you were dead. You were dead. So the fellas, the Macmillans particularly up there, were always chasing Cailleach an Craic, trying to get their hat back, having awful fights. But then you also have another Cailleach not too far away, Cailleach Alt Sai, which is just along the road on the banks of Loch Ness. And apparently she was a more amicable Cailleach, and she would pre-warn all the locals of what Cailleach an Craic was up to and what she was planning. You know, and then that's a very humanized version of the Cailleach. And then you also have the more elemental versions of the Cailleach, which are, you know, the storms. That's also the Cailleach, the goddess of winter, which is a much more elemental version. It's a lot bigger, and so it's very vast. It's so funny, the more I you research folklore, and then you realize that it's literally infinite. It's incredibly varied in its tales and its versions and its renditions, and it depends on where it originated. But when did it originate? Is it 2,000 years ago? Is it 10,000 years ago? And it's interesting because up here we've also got on the map, if you take out a map of the area, we've got quite a few places in Scotland called an Aelric, and that's the Gaelic. It means a natural bowl in the landscape, a natural hunting bowl. So it would have indicated that that's where the warriors, the locals who were gathering all the food, doing all the hunts with their hounds, they would have gathered all of the deer, the boar, into these natural bowls in the landscape and then hunted them down. So there's an Aelric just up there, and we've got Cullen Finia, which is just across the road, and then Isle of Skye, Dún Scá. So more than likely the Fianna were, I would say, in this area if they were real. And I mean, why disbelieve that they weren't? I like to think that they were probably real around the Iron Age. The warriors also included women as well, which I just recently found in a book. Ban Fini, Ban is woman, so woman warrior. The more I learn about the myths and legends, the more magic there is for the land and the world, and the more I feel like it's an integral part of learning about the landscape. We can learn about the individual species names, but unless we learn the stories of our relationship with them and understand that, I think there's a missing element. But the stories of the land bring it all together. And the idea of the Seanchéí, the storyteller, I think that's something that is reviving. I feel like the stories of the land are getting a huge resurgence at the moment, and it's a very exciting time. And the Gaelic as well. I think, you know, Ireland is where I'm from, and we learn it in school from a young age. And in Scotland, I think we just need to work a bit harder to make Gaelic more accessible and continue spreading it and talking it as much as we can, even if it's only a little bit that we know. Keep working on it and introduce ourselves in the morning, you know, Madanva, or say goodnight, Ihava. It really does keep it alive. And the Dundregan Rewilding Centre has been very focused on making sure that the Gaelic is part of the story. So when we do our walks, we learn and we talk as much Gaelic as we can. And, you know, it's been a journey learning the stories of the land and realizing that you can't separate stories from the Gaelic language, because the Gaelic language is the oldest, the longest running language. And, you know, English is actually only a recent thing.
Wow. That's just so many wonderful stories.
Yes, the land is absolutely heaving with them, and Kiva is such a wonderful storyteller and researcher. After we chatted, we went on a walk up to the old oak tree atop the fairy hill, and it is truly magical. I could have stayed up there all day amongst the great boughs and branches of this grand old tree, overlooking all of Glenmoriston and beyond.
Be honest, did you see any fairies?
Didn't see any fairies. I did leave 3 kilograms of butter in the hopes that they will get back to me in a few weeks.
So if you too would like to be embraced by a fairy tree and hear more of these wonderful tales from Kiva, then you can book a guided walk and talk and explore the world of the Fae at Dundragon. If you'd like to learn even more and get completely immersed in rewilding, you can book one of the residential weekend experiences. Now, they offer a range from Introduction to Rewilding, the Rewilding Experience, Rewild and Restore, and Rewild and Reconnect. Lots of re's in there.
You can find the link to these in the show notes or go to visitdundragon.co.uk. If you see a red squirrel in the Highlands, or in fact anywhere in Scotland, you can log it at savingscotlandsredsquirrels.org.uk. I've registered my little friend in my local forest, and it gave me a cheeky wink and a high five as thanks.
Rewilding is all about the people. So next time you're travelling to Skye or hunting for Nessie, make sure to stop and take in the mountains, glens and forests of Dundragon. Get involved, go on a mythology and nature walk, learn about rewilding, Scotland's environment and our place in it. I think it's a fantastically rewarding thing to do.
All this makes Dundragon Rewilding Centre a must-stop destination on your next Scottish road trip.
Thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much for Dundragon for telling us such amazing stories and inspiring us with rewilding. Until next time, Slán de bhaith.
Slán de bhaith. So a few examples of these are...
I'm just going to apologise to my Gaelic teacher and to myself because I just lost my 900-day streak on Gaelic Duolingo.
No! Buy it back. Pay the £15. It's worth it.
It didn't give me an offering to do that. I would have given them a piece of my soul to keep that streak. But yeah.
Oh no! Oh my god, Annie, I'm so sorry. This is upsetting on so many levels.